Human trafficking is not only complex, it has also remained largely invisible. Meanwhile, the world is more increasingly interconnected through online channels, and this has added a different layer of exploitation and abuse, particularly of children and women, and that's on top of the traditional cross-border human trafficking that we know about. It is also as much a migration issue. But while preventing human trafficking remains a challenge, it is not impossible. This year, ICMPD's experts and research partners have introduced a new manual. This manual helps institutions and individuals to detect potential victims, and it also supports victims and survivors in terms of case management and referral services. Here with us today to speak about this in more detail is ICMPD senior researcher Madalina Lepša-Rogoz. Hi, Madalina. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. And also joining us all the way from Bogota in Colombia is Sergio Rivera of Fundación Renacer, which is one of the partners of the Heroes Project. Hola, Sergio. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, everyone. Thank you, Mike, for inviting us. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you both very much for joining us. It's really a pleasure to have you both. Now let's just start talking about Heroes. Please tell us about the Heroes Project.
The Heroes Project is a Horizon 2020 research project financed by the European Commission. Its aim is to support practitioners in addressing trafficking in human beings and child sexual abuse and child sexual exploitation in three main areas, in prevention, prosecution of the crimes, and victim protection. So there are, I think, about 8 tools that address these issues. Just to give an example, there is one tool that can identify with over 90% precision where in a video you find child sexual abuse material. The aim of the manual for early identification of potential victims of trafficking and child sexual abuse and child sexual exploitation is to support frontline responders and other relevant practitioners to early identify and refer potential and actual cases of trafficking and child sexual abuse, child sexual exploitation to adequate services. In ICMPD, researchers and anti-trafficking experts partnered with the Heroes consortium partners, namely Fundación Renacer, Universidad Complutense de Madrid, Trilateral Research, and the Center for Women and Children's Studies to develop this manual. This supports police officers, prosecutors, when they seize devices from organized crime, for instance, to look for child sexual abuse material. There are other apps, such as apps that try to signalize to parents when their children's phones receive messages that have the potential to be grooming their children.
Does this make it easier for parents to relate with their children in terms of their safety?
Indeed, this app has received quite some attention, and parents and people that have heard of it are very interested in having hands on such an app. The apps that have been developed in the Heroes Project have a certain level of usability, so there are still some steps to be taken until these apps are going to be really on the market.
It sounds very practical, and it's innovative even. And of course, the world needs more tools of these, like these, especially these days. Can we talk about the research that led to this, the kind of information we worked on, and also, of course, the kind of partners that we worked with?
In the Heroes Project, ICMPD was leading a particular strand of the research on social science and humanities, where we explained from a legal and social perspective what trafficking human being is and what child sexual abuse and child sexual exploitation is and what is the online element in these crimes. And we looked in different countries, and we developed ourselves a set of tools as well, including the manual for the early identification of victims, of potential victims of trafficking in human being and child sexual abuse and exploitation.
And naturally, there's a very close interrelation between migration and trafficking. And so that's why our experience at ICMPD is very useful in developing both the research and the manual aspect to this.
More recently, you don't need necessarily to have that transborder element of trafficking in order to have the crime of trafficking. You also have trafficking taking place within a country, within Europe, for instance, so it doesn't need international transportation of potential victims. But indeed, what we've seen as well is that migrant populations are among populations that are vulnerable to exploitation in general, and then to trafficking human beings in particular.
So for us, it was an interesting opportunity to highlight our work, but also put our work to the service around the globe. I think our experience is it's a key factor to understand, and maybe we can address some of the situations that we understand that are important to address.
The Heroes research and also the manual itself covers four countries: Spain, the United Kingdom, Colombia, and Bangladesh. Now, you mentioned Madlina and Sergio earlier about how trafficking does not only happen cross-border, but also within countries, within borders. Even from one town to another, people, and especially children and women, can be trafficked. Can we talk about these, the norms, the common forms of trafficking, the common forms of exploitation and abuse that victims experience in these regions?
What we've seen in the research conducted for producing this manual is that you have different types of exploitation in these particular countries. So, for instance, partners conducting the research in Bangladesh identified labor exploitation of migrant women domestic workers from Bangladesh, particularly in the Gulf and other Arab states. But if we speak about exploitation in Bangladesh, it's particularly exploitation of children, either in the sex industry or other types of exploitation, particularly children who live, for instance, on the street, or children who are exploited by their own parents to produce an income for their very poor families. So these are the forms of exploitation that partners conducting the research in Bangladesh have identified. Then I would let Sergio speak about the situation in Colombia, because he knows it best.
Please, Sergio.
Yeah. So in Colombia, we have this big situation, this big problem, that is the kids are exploited mainly in sexual exploitation. We have this amount of trafficking cases where the children was caught in the in some city specifically and take it to other city in Colombia. But also we have known that we have children that are being transported from one neighborhood to another in the same city. But also we have this situation where the kids are used in the conflict, where groups that work with drugs and sell drugs and all this narco situation that we have, unfortunately, in Colombia, they use also the children, not just only for the sexual exploitation, but also for the for being part of these groups and being used as a soldiers, if you want. So that's maybe one of the situations that also bring us to a lot of situation of abuse and these children, especially the teenagers that they are being abused in this situation. So they are not only one kid being victim, but also their sons and their daughters, they are also used in this situation.
Could we perhaps mention some forms of abuse and exploitation and even other forms of trafficking in the context of Spain and the UK, which are also part of this study?
So in Spain, there are two main types of exploitation have been identified in this particular research. There is trafficking in migrant women for forced prostitution, and there's also online grooming of children for sexual purposes and the production of child sexual abuse material.
Including migrant children?
Yes, in these two. So these two types of exploitation in Spain. And then I think in the UK there was an interesting case because it's slightly different than in other countries. It's not the type of exploitation is not necessarily new, but we've looked at the relationship between trafficking and county lines and trafficking and cuckooing. So county lines relates to illegal drugs that are transported from one area to another. And basically the county line is the mobile phone line used to take the order of drugs. And this links with trafficking human beings as people are exploited, particularly for this purpose. And then cuckooing is a practice where people take over a person's home to use it also for exploitative purposes.
What did the research tell us, apart from, of course, the comparative analysis and also the cases that we have seen across all these four countries and other countries even with which we have research partners in? How did we come up with a manual?
The manual is one of the tools that we developed in the Heroes project. So ideally, initially the research, the social science and humanities research, was thought to look into different types of exploitation, and the research that could be used to develop the technical tools, the ones that I spoke briefly about in the beginning, and then also to study in depth the areas in which Heroes focused, in one of the areas being early identification of potential victims. So, and this is how the manual came about. And we partnered with researchers that are partners in the project, and they are experts in their particular areas, and they've conducted a research and made sure that basically the same methodology was used across different countries. We partnered up with other researchers. So we partnered up with Fundación Renacer in Colombia, who's one of the research partners in Colombia, but also with Trilateral Research and with Universidad Complutense de Madrid from Spain, and as well with the Center for Women and Children's Studies from Bangladesh.
Can you tell us more about the technical and practical aspects of the manual, its design as a tool? Perhaps we can start with Sergio, whether you'd like to use your work in Colombia as an example.
One of the things is that we said and that we used in this case, in this particular case, was to put some of the experience that we have with the victims and that we know that for the people that who can use the manual can use it for being more accurate with the questions, with the understanding of the situation, to give an understanding of the victims and being able to understand the pain, to be able to understand the economic situation, the situation of some emotional indicators that you can use. So for our side, just was not just something like, oh, you have to ask this or question that or say that, was our understanding of the victims, of the impact, the emotional and psychological impact of the over the victims that have the exploitation. I mean, like, if we know that we have this situation, the best question could be this one or this other, and having always in mind that the victim is the center of the situation, and we have to be actually we have put it some key in words or some key phrases that give the person that used the manual to know, okay, if you are going to ask how long have you been in this town or this place, you have to be aware of this situation previously, that is, well, maybe one of the victims have interrupted education or a very low level of schooling. And I think in the general idea of the manual is basically that, to be able to understand how the victims feel and how the victims are in this moment, and maybe have this question very, I want to say, like, very humanistic questions. It's not just a question of okay, you are here, so you have to answer me that, or this or that, but we have to understand the pain and we plan it in this way.
So what indicators do, basically, they show that there is a probability that in that specific situation, you might have extreme exploitation. This extreme exploitation could be trafficking. So with this manual, we are trying to provide a tool to practitioners to make it easier for them to identify potential exploitation in a situation, right? So the manual has two large parts, if you wish. In the first part, we kind of present the indicators that already exist internationally. We explain what these two crimes are, and then we present the indicators that exist at international level and that have been used already. And then in the second part, we go to more into depth in the research that we and partners conducted in these countries, and present specific indicators to the types of exploitation that exist in these countries.
Do those indicators include things like when, as a social worker or as a teacher or a hotel worker, does that also include tracking the way certain potential victims behave or certain potential perpetrators behave towards certain potential victims, judging from how the behaviors are?
So we have at least three types of indicators: visible, so physical indicators, verbal communication that you could observe when you get into a conversation with someone, and then non-verbal or behavioral kind of, which to a certain extent belong to the physical one, but not necessarily. Indeed, these indicators can be used by different professionals in their environments when they get in contact with potential victims, but they are targeted mainly at potential victims.
And I think one of the things that Madalena said that is very important is that we have these indicators, these visible or these physical indicators, and we have the opportunity to put here something like the children victims usually are aggressive beyond normal, for example, but also children present symptoms of signs of wounds or sexual transmitted infections in their mouths, or children have many wounds of scars on their bodies. You know, it's not just to answer the question, are you a victim of this kind of situation? Are you a victim of abuse? Are you a victim of child sexual exploitation? It's more that you have all this kind, and if you have checked maybe 3, 4, 5, or 6 of these signs or these indicators, you cannot be aware of. So if the child uses languages or refers to situations that are not appropriate for his age or her age, you have to be able to understand, okay, if a children of 8, 9, 10 years old is talking about sex, it's talking about something related with the webcamming or the streaming of videos, if he knows or she knows how to put these images in some platform to sell it, he or she understand all these dynamics, they can be in danger. So you better report. If you work with children and you understand that the child uses expressions of high sexual content, or that they know that the existence of pimps or similar figures of the pimps, and such as we have something, the sugar daddies or something like that. If you hear that in your interview, in your work with children, so you have to go to report. The manual, from my perspective, is a very important tool to be able to understand what kind of questions you have. And actually, the manual doesn't have specifically something like, okay, if you have been abused, what kind of abuse you have been suffered for the last 2 weeks or 2 years or whatever. But they actually gave you the information. For example, who paid for your tickets to come here? How did you get to the city? Have you been required to take nude or underwear photos or videos? Or could you recognize all the documents you receive as your own? Have you been injected with any kind of drugs or that prevent you from moving in any context? So from my side, I think it's very important for this, because you have all these situations, but it's not precisely just over the kind of exploitation that you are suffering.
Sergio mentioned about these very critical and sometimes very obvious indicators of potential victims. These are very visible marks or signs. Who are these first-line responders exactly? Are they limited to social workers, or do they also include teachers? Or more importantly, who can be first-line responders?
Anybody can be a first-line responder. Ideally, this is intended for people who work in environments where exploitation can occur. So indeed, it is about law enforcement agents, labor inspectors, non-governmental organizations, health, but also education professionals.
Teachers. So they're the ones who are in daily contact with children. So they are also the ones who can see, who can spot these signs more easily.
Sure.
What about our experience in Bangladesh?
The way in which the manual is currently being used, but by our partners in Bangladesh, we were told that early identification of potential victims of trafficking is important for those who are working on these issues at the community level. Our partners in Bangladesh work a lot with the law enforcement agents, especially with the police and health service providers. The manual is also helpful because they get a clear idea of the vulnerability factors leading to trafficking. So it's easier to make a decision whether to make a referral in a particular case or not.
What has been your experience? What have you witnessed so far in terms of how the manual has been implemented, how it's been used to detect potential victims, and at the same time, how it's been used in referring survivors to services?
In this particular situation, we left it at the level of the country, depending on what referral mechanisms are available in that specific country. So it is more about what kind of resources a professional, kind of an individual, has to refer a potential situation of exploitation.
This sounds like a very complex, even at a very practical level. It's a complex process, also very sensitive. How challenging has it been in terms of implementation, not only for the first line responders, but also for the other government stakeholders? Have there been challenges and issues along the way?
One part of the research we've conducted in this strand of the research, looking at trafficking human beings and child sexual abuse and exploitation, is on how victims that have been identified are being treated in criminal proceedings in some countries. And the challenges remain similar to those presented in other reports, cooperation between different stakeholders, so between NGOs that support victims and law enforcement agencies. But also there are challenges with regard to trust that victims have in authorities. So even if they are referred to and they receive support, they are reluctant to engage with law enforcement. And contribute to the criminal case.
But one of the biggest challenge is we still facing these situations that give us the idea, or that gives the idea, that everything in Colombia is able to be sold or bought. So in this sense, most of the challenges that we are facing is that the people normally doesn't understand that the victims are victims, and basically this is why the manual is very important, because the manual gives you all the framework that you can understand, okay, if the children has this situation or the children has this particular behavior, you can understand better.
In these processes of in the process of a criminal case, do family courts, especially judges or prosecutors, do they make use of the inputs gathered by the tools?
To a certain extent, they do. But the indicators support first-line respondents to identify whether there is the potential of exploitation in a particular case, and then they decide whether to refer the case or not. However, the decision on whether that is trafficking or that is child sexual abuse or that is child sexual exploitation resides with the mainly with law authorities. So it could be the police, it could be prosecutors, it could be judges. So they have to gather basically evidence to build a case.
As Colombia, as a country, we have made great efforts to align our national legal framework with the international standards. You know, that's very important to us, to have this legal framework give us the opportunity to have the tools, legally talking, to fight against trafficking human beings. In this sense, we have this very complete and very robust institutional framework to combat these crimes. We have the laws, we have the authorities to work with about this issue, and we have this institutional structure to be able to report, to starting to work with the victims, to give them the opportunities to have access to justice and access to the care and the programs that they have the opportunity to join to be able to recover themselves after the situation of exploitation. So that is a very important thing. We have all the institutional framework and all the structure in the state to be able to report. What we want with the manual or with this kind of tools of prevention is that the people knows that something can be harmful for the kids, something can be risky for the kids. So if you understand that and you report, you made your part. You don't have to be able to know, oh, this is a crime, or this is a situation of trafficking, or this is exploitation, or this is sexual abuse. You have to understand there is something of this manual that you can identify in your work, and you have the lines to report. You have these hotlines, national hotlines that you can go. You can send emails to some institutions.
Could we just touch very briefly on any legal and or law enforcement level challenges in terms of implementation of the manual in Colombia?
The biggest situation is we are a country of over maybe 50 million people, and the law enforcement agency doesn't have all the strength and the scope to work with all the country. For example, in some towns, we have one or two cops for all the towns, towns of 2,000 people, 3,000 people, 15,000 people, and you have one police officer, and maybe if you're lucky, some other institutions there. So our challenges with this is that we have to ensure that more and more people knows about it. And, for example, you have mentioned before, the teachers are key in this situation. I think we can use this manual as a tool for the teachers. But if you are some community leader, you have to understand some of this. And this is the challenge that we are facing with the law enforcement agencies, is that they have a lot of situations to cover. So they don't understand specifically everyone or everything about it. So we have this situation that where one police officer is trained in trafficking in human beings, but suddenly for any reason have to leave and goes to another city and another department of the institution. So they starting to work with drug dealers or another crime. So we lost this capacity. So basically, we have this big rotation of the officers and the people who knows about it. And for that, we have to be able to give them some tools that they can use. For everyone who come or who join the forces or who join the institutional level can use it to understand the risk and situations that you can be aware of. And this lack of training is very hard to address. So again, I think this manual could be give us the opportunity to give to say to them, okay, please use it.
We've already launched it in English, and now we have the Spanish version. Perhaps we can have another version, another language in the future. Perhaps it's a question to whether we can expand the program in the future.
I think in the project, we discussed about it, who has access to the manual, and considering that the HEROES project also conducted research in countries in Latin America and as well as in Spain, so a lot of stakeholders from these countries then can have access to the manual easier, if you want, if they find it in Spanish. It's also a way to give back to the respondents that we had and to the contributors that the research had, basically, not only going into communities or going to practitioners and getting information on how they do their work, but also giving back in terms of giving back a very useful tool.
Yeah, I think that's, as I mentioned, the Spanish version has just ended in some weeks ago. The manual is designed and is planned as a methodology. It's very important to us to have these opportunities to share the word with the frontline workers, you know, with the interviewers that have children in his work and working with the communities, for example, would be useful. Okay, I mean, we can go to the police or we can go to the institution in Colombia that works with the with children in protection of children. So that I think that is very important to this. And I think that in the future will be an interesting tool to be used for the frontline workers.
Many of trafficking, whether cross-border or within countries, involve, of course, the movement of people. One of the key sectors that's involved in this and probably has a front row seat to this happening is the travel and tourism sector. I've seen this in many other countries in Asia, for example, but I'd be very interested to hear how you reach to this sector specifically in the countries that we have covered.
From our side in Colombia, we have developed within the HEROES project to raise awareness about trafficking in human beings and sexual exploitation. But it's a strategy where we have worked with, as you mentioned, the travel and tourism sector specifically and mainly with airlines. And they have some in-flight cards to raise awareness with the travelers about trafficking in human beings. These in-flight cards are in all the flights. So it's information that is crossing the world because they have traveling to Europe. And one of the things that I think is important to mention is many of the victims that are trafficked in international situations goes many of them goes through Spain to other places in the world or Europe or Asia or even Africa, but we have it also in their Latin American flights. So we are working with them with this in-flight cards that is very important. Also, we have been working with them I think the biggest carnival in Colombia, that is the Barranquilla's carnival, El Carnaval de Barranquilla, the biggest carnival here. So they attract a lot of people who come to Colombia. So as Alina says, we have these situations or the manual, and these situations can be used where the children are more exposed to danger. So in Colombia specifically, we have this situation that all over Colombia we have immigrants from Venezuela. So in all the cities in Colombia, we have these children and these families who came to Venezuela after the situation that they had in 2018 or something like that. So they are very exposed to vulnerabilities. So in this, in the framework of these carnivals and stuff, they are being abused and exploited. So in the carnival, we have made it with the city, and we have made it with the company that organized this carnival. So they are part of the strategy. It's a strategy that includes big actors of the tourism. If you get together this approach of raising awareness with the private sector, with the airlines, with the airports, and you get together with the frontline workers, knowing about how to understand the risks and the situations of the children.
The Heroes Project has now developed or led to the enhanced e-learning curriculum on sexual abuse, assault, online solicitation, production, and also in the legal and ethical analysis and distribution of abusive materials on children. How should we continue to expand the project, whether in terms of implementation or whether in terms of further research?
One of the immediate ways in which we can continue the work is actually anti-trafficking experts in ICMPD are using the model of identifying country-specific vulnerabilities to trafficking and developing a country-specific indicators for identification of trafficking human beings in a project in Cabo Verde. So in this particular project, anti-trafficking experts of ICMPD are supporting the government of Cabo Verde in developing their list of country-specific indicators.
Projects like Heroes give us the opportunity to sell, in the good way of the word, to the state and the frontline workers and the social workers and the LIA and the law enforcement agencies, to give them the opportunity and the possibilities to work together with a large kind of experts. ICMPD, it's one of them. And unfortunately, it's one of the ways that we are connecting between countries. That kind of projects give us opportunity to improve the work that we have been doing together. So that is one of the keys I have, and I have to say too, that the technological aspects of the project could be used in the future too, so maybe we can invest more in it. I think maybe we can join these technical solutions, technological and all these machine learning tools, and these social aspects to get together and work together with this.
Thank you both of you for this very enriching discussion and for sharing your inputs and knowledge and experience in the field. Thank you very much, Madalena. Anything else you would like to add?
Well, thank you, Mike, for having us. I would invite everybody to check out the manual. It is available in English and in Spanish, and as well in the work that we've done in the Heroes Project on the Heroes website.
Sergio, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Mike, Madalena, for the opportunity to be here. It's been a pleasure to talk with you and listen to you. Hopefully we can be together again in the future. So from this side of the world, we're pleased and more than happy to be part of it. So thank you so much.
Thank you both. We have just been joined today by Madalena Lapshar-Rogoz and Sergio Rivera-Reyes, two of the drivers of the Heroes Research and Manual project, which is now being used in detecting human trafficking and supporting victims and survivors globally. With travel becoming easier and international trade growing and people's increasing movement across borders, migration will go on. But what should not go on, however, is the trafficking of people, especially children. The Heroes Project is just one step forward, but will require stronger implementation and naturally a bigger reach. This has been another episode of the Migration Podcast by ICMPD. Follow our series on our website and more content from our social media channels, where we highlight the issues, the research, the projects and the partnerships, and most of all, the human stories of migration. Thank you until next time.